Genau.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, of all days, this is an interesting day. Talk about positivity. One of the things about the positive mind is sometimes you meet people who are so positive that they just seem wacky. Other times you see people who are so positive that they make you sick. And then there are times that you're just so happy to be around someone who has a positive attitude. And what is a positive attitude? Do we consider a positive attitude someone who is just peaceful and calm and nice? What about those earth shakers, those positive people who are so positive that they seem to move everything around them? Well, for that, I am so grateful to have in the studio with me Dr. Ronald Feevey, F-I-E-V-E, who has written a book called Bipolar 2, which is not a book about, oh, my God, you're crazy because you've got a bipolar disorder. This is a book that says if you've got Bipolar 2, let's take a close look at it. And listen, my friends, you may have been given a gift, and this gift can be used in your life. Welcome to our WBAI. Welcome again, because, I don't know, 20 years ago you and I had an interview while I was hosting for Gary Noe. So welcome again.
Well, hi, Armin. I'm delighted to be here again, to see you again, and I'm very positive about this next hour.
Yeah, so talk about positive. Let's talk about bipolar, too. Let's talk about it, Doc. We've got this condition. People are all nowadays, everybody's bipolar. Well, let's talk about bipolar 1 first. What's bipolar 1? What is bipolar?
Well, Armin, first of all, beginning at the turn of the century, the term manic depression started out, although it's been, these patients have been identified back to Greek and Roman times as having a kind of a circular mood disorder. But at the turn of the century in Europe, Kreplin invented this term, bipolar, manic depression, and it stayed with us throughout the 50s and 60s until psychiatric researchers began studying and naming these things in different terms. And the equivalent to manic depression in the late 80s and early 90s became bipolar. But bipolar was a term that included everything. It included people that were manic depressives that were hospitalized psychotic, paranoid, and manic depressives that were euphoric all the time, wanted to throw dollars out of their $100 bills out of their purses. You had the whole range. In addition to the very mild bipolar, they're all put together, linked together as manic depression. So,
wasn't there also different kinds of depression? We're talking about the manic part of it.
We are, yes. We had plain clinical depression that had no manic phase to it, upside.
And that was still in bipolar. We still put that in the manic depression.
That's
it's
correct.
It's not just this time. It's not just depression.
The whole field of naming and labeling psychiatric illnesses evolved beginning around the late 1980s with the research psychiatric group in this country sponsored by the APA, American Psychiatric, called the Diagnostical Statistical Manual of Schizophrenia and Manic Depressive Disorders. So as that evolved into the early 90s, some of the mild bipolar patients who obviously were not sick and paranoid and psychotic and getting hospitalized, but were known, even though they had depressions that sometimes were significant, were outstanding leaders in many walks of life, in fact, all walks of life. So the research psychiatrist for the first time in the early 90s labeled this subgroup of milder or softer bipolar patients as bipolar 2. That meant that the severe and sick ones that had to go into the hospital psychotic were called the bipolar 1s. So we now have the division, bipolar 1, the old form of manic depression since the turn of the century, and bipolar 2, this new one that is softer and has an asset to it, a beneficial side of this illness, and that's the subject of my new book.
Yeah, and I could tell you it's beautiful to see someone come out writing a book about, it says, enhance your highs, boost your creativity, and escape the cycles of recurrent depression. And it's like recognizing that you may have bipolar 2, and I don't even like to say disorder, that you may be bipolar 2, though a bipolar B, as you call it, right?
Yeah, I don't like to use the term disorder myself anymore.
Yeah.
And the bipolar 2s, the milder bipolars, who accomplish enormous amounts in their lifetimes, I've labeled a bipolar beneficial. Now, the diagnostic group in this country, it's going to take them 20 years to incorporate that term as a subgroup. But this is it. There is an asset hidden in this spectrum that used to be included only as a sick manic depressive group. So this is a new thing that we found, and it's something you got to look at and tease out in your own family, in your own self. If you're one of these high-flying people that has got a lot of energy, that only needs 5 or 6 hours sleep, is a multitasker, and it cannot wait for these other slow people around you, and is an accomplished person, chances are you got the bipolar 2 beneficial.
Now, bipolar 2, we would imagine we would see a lot of rock stars, you know, who have been looked at. We had a lot of musicians who are up there who are achieving a lot. You know, Mick Jagger.
Yes.
You know, Mick Jagger looks like a bipolar
guy. Sure.
You know, it's there. The energy is there. The creativity is there. Other known people that we've seen, and admittedly, Ted Turner said he was bipolar and he's seen himself, but he was never really crippled by his bipolarity.
No. It enhanced his professional life and his creativity. I mean, He
went from trying to buy CBS to owning Wyoming.
That's right. First did America's Cup, won that, said, okay, I've done that. Let's give me the next thing. And off goes CNN, he creates. And this has been his entire career.
If you are related to or married to or are one of the movers and shakers in the planet and you're with somebody with a lot of activity and a lot of who succeed at things, who can do a lot of things, it's very tough. But if you recognize, Dr. Fevey is saying, if you recognize the bipolarity, the bipolar B, you're going to find it easier to deal with less expectations and a way to actually live with this in a successful way. Because the one thing we know about bipolar people is they get a lot of divorces.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's very rough to love somebody who's a cyclone. They're a force of nature.
Yeah, you know, a hurricane, that's right. I always see
or him McCain.
Yeah. I always see that a high-flying bipolar patient tends to marry someone that goes along, and there's a balance. So, you know, the highly energetic person is complemented by a person that doesn't have that much energy. But if one bipolar marries another bipolar, it's the greatest love affair in the world. But the minute you sign that marital paper, crises begin. You know, it's hard to live with someone like yourself if you're flying here and flying there and doing this and doing 100 things. If you got another person doing the same thing in your household, it's very tough.
It's like two spinning tops.
Yeah.
And they, you know, the top could spin on its own and be beautiful, but when they touch each other, they jerk away.
That's right. But when a bipolar falls in love, he doesn't want to fall in love with a slowpoke. He wants someone like himself. But when you sign that paper and get married, living with yourself is very rough.
Well, you know, one of the things I've seen, Ronald, is that a bipolar, very often somebody who's manic, will look for somebody, like you said, who's on the other side, who's depressed, who becomes like an anchor.
You know what
that
is? I hate to use the word, but that's the medication. That's the lithium. The other person, the slower person,
becomes
is the bipolar's
medication.
It slows them down, you know?
We were talking about medication a little earlier. You know, people medicate themselves, and they medicate their energies. A person who's depressed will often medicate themselves by drinking coffee or by choosing a relationship with somebody who fires them, who keeps their fire alive, who challenges them. And it's a way of adjusting your chemistry.
High stimulus addiction, I like to call it, you know. A person is depressed. Instead of going to get treatment or take a drug or do psychotherapy, you have high stimulus addictive personalities in your life that sort of give you the equivalent of an antidepressant.
The manic depressive is perfect. The manic depressive 2 is perfect for that. The bipolar 2 is perfect for that because they are so stimulating, yeah. So exciting, so fiery, so wild. It promises to keep you going for a long
period
of time.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah.
And without them, also, they're great to invite to parties.
Oh, they're the, you know what I mean? They're life of the party. That's,
the life of
I've got
the party.
This in the book, you know. They're the charmers, the witty people. They're the life of the party. But they're the people that don't need 7.5, 8.5, 9, 10 hours sleep. They usually get 4 or 5. And, you know, if they get too high, they're doing 3 and 4. That's a danger zone. If you're doing 3 and 4 hours sleep and running a corporation or doing thing, that's dangerous. But the 4 and 5ers, there are a lot. There are probably millions in this country that can get along on 4 or 5 hours sleep. And these people get up. They're alert. They're bright. They start in 6 o'clock in the morning. They wind up going to bed, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock the next day, and they have a constant flow of ideas and actions and communications with the whole rest of the world.
How do you think, Dr. Fevey, how do you think bipolarity interfaces, and before you respond to it, I'll tell you why I'm asking the question, with psychopathy? And the reason I ask this is the following. I have a feeling that somebody who is this kind of a mover and a shaker, this energetic person, I don't think they're bad people. I don't think that they are, you know, that they're using people as much as just spinning in their own world. Whereas the psychopath, the narcissist, the person who is really using people who may have a high energy is more destructive almost by intention, you know, because they don't care about people. So the high-fired salesman could be manic, or he could be a psychopath, or he could be both. How much psychopathy do you see in manic depression? And it's a big question,
but I may as well ask
the professional.
No, it's an excellent question. You know, my basic answer is that I think this is an area of research that needs to be done, because with all of the recent classification of the bipolar spectrum over the last 20 years, we've ignored psychopathy. You know, these people, we say they're liars, they're cheaters, they commit felonies, they go to prison. But we don't know the interaction of these two groups of people. And I think there's a tremendous overlap, because the bipolar patient becomes highly manipulative. You know, when they're not manipulating the slot machines, they're manipulating people. And how does this move over into the area of psychopathy, where some bipolars are doing fraudulent things with billions of dollars of money on Wall Street? These people, you know, oftentimes appear in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. They come in handcuffs, and someone says, "Oh, he was diagnosed by a psychiatrist as bipolar." But he's this high-flying, successful Wall Street tycoon that has gone too far. Now, how does that intersect with psychopathy? You know, and then with psychopathy, you get into rage and murder and, you know, all a whole spectrum of things. So this is an uncharted field now that demands more research on the part of psychologists and psychiatrists, psychiatric researchers in the next decade.
There's a diagnostic tool that you use when trying to study whether or not a person would be considered bipolar. You ask about hospitalization or the near hospitalization. Could you describe that?
Yes. Well, it's one thing for a person to say they've been moody. They're moody. That's part of the normal personality, to have mild ups and downs that are based on the reactions to the vicissitudes of life. So that's normal moods. But when we get into a high, angry, or euphoric mood where psychosis creeps in and the person is delusional, he thinks he's Jesus Christ, or he feels the world is against him, he's persecuted, and he's got a shotgun loaded in his place, this type of high, psychotic, manic has to be hospitalized. And if they're not hospitalized, they should have been hospitalized. Now, if you get a history from the patient or the family of hospitalization due to this high-flying, manic, psychotic, paranoid, or euphoric delusional state, that gets them into the label or psychiatric classification as bipolar 1 if they've had some depressions too. But it's the manic, severe mania that causes the diagnosis bipolar 1.
When you say, or should have been hospitalized, because in many cultures they don't want to go near doctors, they don't trust the culture, so they don't trust the environment.
Here in New York City, I would wager that of every manic hospitalized for manic psychosis, there are three or four that wrote it out at home with the doctor prescribing major doses of tranquilizers or not going to the doctor and the wife sitting it out and getting beaten up. But somehow, and it goes away. It doesn't last forever.
Or they drink alcohol.
They drink alcohol. They do
they
self.
They go into a stupor. They self-medicate until it passes by.
Self-medication. But three out of four that should have been hospitalized for manic behavior, severe, are sitting it out, not going to the hospital, and avoiding. Of course, in other cultures which don't have sophisticated hospitalizations like we do, it's much more than that. Most people don't go in at all. And of course, a lot of accidents happen. Sometimes these people are accidentally killed or get into rages and, you know, kill someone else.
So we have two different – this is Armand DeMille. We're speaking with Dr. Ronald Fevey, who just released a book called Bipolar 2, which is about the people who are not as severely – extreme in their bipolarity, that they have both the manic and the depressive part, but these are the earth movers. These are the people who you see much more in everyday life. And then we have one more condition, which I guess we should talk about, which is bipolar 3, which is just to mention it, which is one we created.
Yeah, this is an interesting condition. It's diagnosed in the psychiatrist's office in a patient who recently was put on an antidepressant. It could be Prozac, it could be Zoloft, it could be Wellbutrin, any of the antidepressants, and suddenly went into a high for the first time in their life being given an antidepressant. Now, the way you diagnose this is you look, first of all, at the past history of this person. Were there highs in the past? Were there mood swings in the past that never were severe enough to go to get attention by a psychiatrist? Or was there a family history? A typical manic depressive family history would include a relative that suicided, a relative treated for depression, a relative alcoholic or drug abuse, or outstanding achievement in this genetic history family. If you find that, or if you find a past history of bipolar, mild moods that never even had attention by a doctor, and someone comes along and treats this person for depression for the first time, they go into a high, we call that bipolar 3. It's caused by the antidepressant in a genetically vulnerable person for bipolar in the family tree.
So there's a person who's got the potential for it, has never manifested it, but it just still appear because you gave him one of these dynamo medications that do this thing, you know, trigger it off. So just going back, if a person has bipolar 2, we say that there's a kind of a mild euphoria, there's a euphoria that's powerful at the point where the person loses a lot of sleep. Right, when you're down to 2 or 3 hours a day, we're now going from bipolar 2 suspecting
bipolar 1.
Right?
Yeah. Now, most of the time, the bipolar 2s remain true. They usually don't switch back and forth to bipolar 1 and 2. Now, once you are a bipolar 1, once you've had one psychiatric hospitalization for mania, you're a bipolar 1 your whole life.
Even if it's mild.
Yeah, but if all the rest of them are mild, and this is probably typical of Joshua Logan, and I'm not saying something out of school. He was a patient of mine. We were on the Barbara Walters show here a number of times, and he was very proud to talk about the fact that he got so high that he was hospitalized once. Now, here's a guy who was a bipolar 1 and still had an incredible life of creativity, you know, Mr. Roberts, South Pacific, all those outstanding things that he did. And he was treated for many, many years on medication, did extraordinarily well. So you don't convert usually from a bipolar 1 to a bipolar 2. You're always a bipolar 1. The bipolar 2s can, you know, maybe with alcohol or certain stresses in their lives or drugs, go from a mild high that's being extremely useful and creative to that person, the family, and the society, to getting tipped off to a crazy psychotic high where they're sleeping 3 hours and then going off the deep end.
So now once they do that, can't they come back to their bipolar?
They're basically bipolar twos that have been tripped off by something like a drug or something in the environment that have converted them into that severe episode. But usually they go back to the mild episode.
So now wait, once you've been hospitalized, you're a bipolar one forever.
Yep.
Unless you've been a two who got hospitalized
exactly.
because of a stressor, and then you go back to being a two.
Exactly, exactly.
So once falling off and spinning out into
right.
space doesn't necessarily mean you're gone forever.
If you have a history of all of these enormous energy, charm, you have a you're a fairly well-adjusted person in society, and great success. You're basically a bipolar two patient, and can you have a severe setback so you go into the category of bipolar one? Yes, by virtue of something happening in the society. But genetically, if you're bipolar two, a mild person, you don't go into a sudden delusional psychotic state like the bipolar ones do. They breed true most of their lifetimes.
This is Armando Miller. We're talking about people with high energy, positive people, people who are the earth movers, which we are calling bipolar too, according to Dr. Ronald Fevey. Great contribution here. I want to talk about that because although you and I know what we're talking about, we talk about family history. Let's slow it down a little and talk about it. That one of the things you want to do, if you're a therapist out there and you're looking to diagnose bipolarity, you must check history. Now, it's amazing how few do it, how few look at the history. Look at the clues we get from history. So, Dr. Fevey, what are the clues that the history tells you?
This is an incredible situation because I remember in my training and work at Columbia in the 1960s, psychiatrists didn't take family histories, and they made a diagnosis in terms of what the patient demonstrated in front of you. Now, if you don't have a person that was psychotic and manic and all the delusional things in front of you, they didn't diagnose it as manic depressive. They didn't look into the past history in detail, and they didn't go to the family history. Now, we know today, any therapist out there that's doing an initial evaluation should take a detailed family history, and that the family history of bipolars, 70-80% of the time has the following in it. And I'm talking about first, second, third degree relatives. You see alcoholism. You see drug addiction. You see a history. Aunt Mame went to a psychiatrist for depression and got an antidepressant. You see suicide in the family. But also you see outstanding achievement. Now, that's the genetic spectrum in the family history, and you got to get that on your initial interview as a doctor.
So we would ignore genetic, we would ignore success. We would say, I remember Seward, from Seward's Folly, his grandson, he had a grandson, and his grandson invented the pop tops from beer cans, those little mm-hmm. tops. So he's an achiever. You look into his history, his grandfather certainly was an achiever, and his children had the same kind of energy going along. And you're saying the following: just as important as hospitalization, just as important as alcoholism, is high achievement. It's a signal. It's a sign.
It's a signal. There may be a mild form of the bipolar there, a bipolar 2 or a bipolar 2 beneficial. Yes.
And sometimes it could be bipolar 1 who's achieving something like becoming a musician and getting
exactly.
discovered and being graced through the world just because they're crazy enough that everybody's feeding the craziness.
Absolutely.
Everybody loves it.
Yep, yep.
So you can have a fully psychotic bipolar person succeeding in life because the world is ready for it.
And then if they add drugs or alcohol to it, it gets even more weird and crazy, you see.
And it looks bizarre, but because it looks bizarre, it's welcomed.
Yeah, exactly.
In some way. And we say, let's celebrate that person. So there's a way that they're not totally dysfunctional.
Now, when I go out to a dinner party and people started getting interested in this topic, I can go around the table and say, look, I get a good idea if you're a bipolar 2, if you tell me how many hours you sleep. Okay? So you get a person that is sleeping 1 or 2 hours, they should be offered an ambulance right at the dinner party to go to the hospital.
If it's regularly two hours a day, right?
Because that only happens in extreme psychotic mania, 1 or 2 or 3 hours a night. That can't go on for 5 or 6 days unless you're in a state of psychotic mania. But what about the 4 and 5 and 5.5 hour people? These are the people that are the bipolar twos. Now, this doesn't ring through 100% of the time, but it is my favorite first question for diagnosing bipolar two. They don't need sleep the way the other group in this country does. You know, the normal, so-called normal, they call them, the bipolar twos call us laggards, you know. If we need to stay in bed 7, 8, 9 hours a night, they are much against that. They don't need that. They get up on 4 or 5 and go about all of their activities. They have high energy and not the need for sleep that the rest of the world. These are the two most important things. So that probably puts both you and I in that category.
Right, so
I never made the six-hour thing, but I'm about a 7.5 myself.
I'm about a six-hour
kind of guy. Of course you are. Of course you are. I can tell that from when I shook hands 20 years ago.
Sure.
He's been sleeping 6 hours for 20 years, and now he finally got...
Every now and then, I guess.
Yeah, it's fascinating, but that is my favorite question. How much time do you need to sleep? Or I'll go to a person, I'll see they're a little bipolar, and I'll say, I bet you only sleep 5 or 6. How did you know, Dr. Beebe? You know, because I see the twinkle in the eye and the energy, and I say, well, this is a bipolar. I bet they only sleep 5 or 6 hours.
Well, how is it, and why do you think that people don't sleep as much? Why do you think? Do you think that they're so wound that their metabolism is so...
I think it's part of the whole genetic endowment that is handed down from one generation to the next. And why is sleep involved in that? Well, you know, the sleep centers in the hypothalamus, along with the eating center and the sex center and the center for mood. So these are all affected in bipolar illness. You know, for instance, if you want to just take a look at the symptoms in depression, they're hopeless, helpless, worthless, the mood symptoms. You gain weight or lose weight. That's the appetite food center. You sleep excessively or sleep less. So all of these are tied up in one area of the brain. So the sleep center is in that same area, and it is similarly affected in the bipolar patient.
So you don't sleep as much, you know. And one of the things that we're going to do in a short while, we're going to take a break. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a lot more. We've got a lot to talk about when it comes to relationships and sex, too, because there's a great deal of how this, the bipolar 2, manifests sexually and how it's affected sexually. But I'm also curious about the about most people who ignore treatment and what happens when they do. I mean, if a person doesn't – I mean, why would you go to therapy if you feel that good?
That's right.
You're feeling good. Why would you go to therapy? Because you've got a friend who says, you know, my buddy, I'm your pal. And, you know, I can tell you're a little manic and you're going this way. It would be not a bad idea for you to go to a treatment because why? Give me a reason to tell a bipolar 2 that it would be not a bad idea for them to seek treatment.
There is no good reason if you're feeling well and you're performing normally in your life, and you're not hurting other people. For instance, if you're a bipolar 2 and you are extending yourself too far and you're coming home 11, 12 o'clock at night because you're getting too caught up in the machinations of money dealings, and you start getting a little fraudulent, and you're home late at night, and your wife and family are worried about you, and still, you know, you talk pretty sensibly, you still have quite a bit of money in the bank, but, you know, the behavior has changed, and the wife sees this, and she says, well, I think you ought to go to the doctor. He says, well, you know, I'm doing very well. I'm feeling well. Why should I do this? It's very hard to talk a person into that. And particularly, this person may also be taking a little more alcohol now to soothe the thing. So it's very hard to give them insight when they're feeling so well. So what happens is that if they fall into the depressed phase, then you can get them to go to the doctor, the psychiatrist. But they're very hard to get to if you're doing better than everyone else. You can't talk a person to go into a psychiatrist. So once they go into
the... There's got to be a way. I tell you, if you love somebody and you approach them the right way and say, no, you're not sick, but you know your children, they miss you because you're so busy, and there must be a way that we could communicate, even if you did it as couples therapy, even as the wife, you said, let's go together.
Well, I think you're offering a very wise advice here as a psychologist that you've been all year. I think this is certainly a an approach that is worth doing, but my own experience is that they don't want to hear much of it. The main defense they use is denial, see?
Nothing.
And then they also do bribing. They're bribing. And then my wife talks, then next thing she gets a diamond ring or something the next day to tell her to shut
just
up.
Just get and off
don't,
your back.
Yeah, don't push me anymore with this psychiatrist stuff, this shrink stuff. I'm a happy guy. I'm making a lot of money. And you're not telling her all the machinations that are going on behind the scene. You know, maybe the house has been mortgaged to the hilt and everything else, and he's got an affair or two in the suburbs. So she doesn't know the whole thing, and she's a slower person than he is. So here she tries to approach him. He wants to shut that out until a depression comes along. Now, if it's a mild depression, he's still not going to want to go to the doctor. He's going to ride it out. He's going to drink more and so forth. But if it's a severe, immobilizing depression, then he or the boss or the colleagues can say, look, you got to go to a doctor, and maybe then he will move over.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, bring you a little music so you can relax, stretch your legs, and then we'll come right back. No Hay Problema. That's the name of the album we're listening to. No Hay Problema. No, we're listening to Pink Martini's original album, Sympathique. No Hay Problema. I thought it was kind of perfect, appropriate music. There is no problem. That's kind of the words that we hear from people who have got this illness that we're talking about. Or if not illness, we'll say variation we're talking about. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you just tuned in to a good Latin rhythm, you're listening to a radio program called The Positive Mind with you on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays at 1 p.m., where we bring you stuff about the human mind. And so with the hope that you're going to understand people better, understand yourself better, and in that way feel more peaceful on the inside. On Thursday, just to let you know, I will be with you on Thanksgiving, and Roberta Maria Atti is going to join me, and we're going to be doing a special program on the flexibility of the human mind, going a little further. But right now, in our studio, a gift. Dr. Ronald Fevey, who is one of the world's leading authorities on a number of things, including depression and the bipolar disorder, has graced us with his presence and his new book, Bipolar 2. Bipolar 2, which is B-I-P-O-L-A-R number 2, in which he describes a condition of a mood that is higher than most people's mood. It's an elevated mood, not necessarily an illness, but it's called bipolar 2, and it's kind of amazing to understand. And that little by little, we've learned that if you could talk to people and talk to them about what they're feeling and the way they are, you can learn and you could probably help see for yourself. Because if you've got a mate who's got a bipolar 2 disorder or bipolar 2 condition, or I gotta get a better word. You know, I'm so used to the word disorder that I gotta do something in my own mind to get rid of that. But if you get someone in your life who is bipolar too, then what you've got is somebody who, if you understand them and you understand their energy and you understand the way they are, you're gonna be able to either choose or not choose to stay with them, but certainly live a better life than trying to corral them all the time. Because a bipolar 2 person with bipolar 2, if you try to throw a lasso around them and tell them just sit still, they're going to have to pull away. And in pulling away, they're going to burn your hands with the ropes. So it's things to understand. And one of the things I wanted to talk about with Dr. Fevey is about the sexuality of the bipolar 2. Because it's probably one of the most obvious signs. You see it in hypersexuality. You see it in a form of sexuality. I think bipolar 2 people are sexy people, don't you think, Dr. Fevey?
Yes. One of the characteristics, things that they talk about in the first interview that I have with them, the evaluation interview, is that they have an unusually high sexual desire or libido since they went into this higher phase. Now, you know, we're talking about bipolar it doesn't go on 12 months of the year in most people. It's 2 weeks, it's 4 weeks, it's maybe 2 months, the high, and then you go back to a normal level, or then you go into a low. But the mild bipolar, the hypomanic patient or person, says they don't need as much sleep as other people do. They have enormous energy, they are more talkative, they're more creative, and they have a high sexual desire or libido that is primed to go all the time. And I did write up in one of my chapters here on sex and other misbehaviors with the bipolar 2 patients, a brief review of one of the cases that came out in the last few years, where we have been, where we've seen in all the papers of this country, a woman in her late 20s or early 30s who, you know, is happily married, and the case there that was described in all the papers is Mary Letourneau, who had 4 children, a happy life, and so forth, and suddenly she was found sleeping, having sex repeatedly with a 13-year-old student of hers. Now, when this all came out and she went to court, she got 7 years of prison and so forth, and she finally got out of prison and And then they started getting together again, even on a she got out early on early good behavior. Then she immediately violated prison rules, and now they're married. So it's an incredible story. But each time that she went to the psychiatrist then when she was getting evaluated, they said, oh, this is a bipolar patient, bipolar 2 patient. So the term bipolar 2 got associated with 4 or 5 court cases that have made the first page of all the papers in America the last 5 years. They're all women in their late 20s or 30s with sort of stable lives that started having sex with a 12 or 13-year-old student. Why did this happen? Bipolar 2. I didn't say it. I didn't meet him. I didn't diagnose it. I don't know if they are, but that was the diagnosis that the psychiatrist gave to all of these women in the major papers of America.
Well, one of the things I saw is that if it's a woman who's choosing a 12 or 13-year-old boy, you generally have you have agreement between the two, because a 12 or 13-year-old boy who has a woman who's very sexually hot, I mean, as 12 and 13-year-old boy, you've got this budding sexuality and no place to put it except your hand.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Masturbation is the only thing available to you. Now you have someone who comes along and says, oh, I want you, and you say, great, I've got a place to put it.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's the opposite, if it's a man who's bipolar, he doesn't have an easy time with 12 or 13-year-olds. That's truly forbidden.
That's right.
So he can't turn in that direction. He'll turn his hypersexuality to another place.
Yep.
So I think the reason why the women find these young boys very attractive is because they are a very available source of a lot of sex, a lot of activity, a lot of orgasm, and a lot of release. And I think that even though we look at it as libido, to me it's like alcohol. It's like the idea of the sex is to relax me for a little bit, is to take me down just a little bit. So I find the hypersexuality of some people to be one where the person could just as easily be masturbating as they could be having sex with someone. They're not interested in real involved relationships and long discussions. They just want to, just release and release and release. Men, on the other hand, who go into a hypomanic phase, they have great difficulty, because if they're married and they have, all they can think about is either I'm going to cheat on my wife, or I'm going to turn on the internet and I'm going to be looking at pornography and I'm going to be masturbating all the time. But sex with the bipolar 2 is like alcohol and almost no different. It's like it's a chemical. It's like I'm going to change my chemistry to feel better. What do you think?
Well, I also think this means that we have to take a good look at our old concept of nymphomania, don't you?
Are these
so-called nymphomania? This was a diagnosis, from the beginning of this century. Are these people really bipolar twos? Because nymphomaniacs were not crazy people. They just had a continuous obsession about sex, and they couldn't get enough of it, and man after man after man. And now I think we got to look at these people, look at their personal histories, their family histories. Many of these certainly were bipolar two people, undiagnosed until today when we have a new nomenclature, a new lookout on this whole thing.
Well, it's the same thing now with sexual addiction. Call sexual addiction, and now there's agencies flying up all over the place treating sexual addiction as a personality disorder, but not considering what you're saying.
Bipolar too, that's right.
In a little while we could take a look at all of these addiction, and they're all over town. Sexual addiction, you have the group, and they meet in the group, and they talk about it. And what happens is people get better over time because they're restricting their behaviors and the mania passes.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't understand is that over time, a hypomanic phase or a phase where you're feeling really manic and hypersexual, it kind of passes for a while.
It does, right. It'll go away on its own.
Yep. It'll go away on its own.
But then it'll come back again, usually.
And then
back.
It'll come back.
Yep.
So a woman has a husband who cheats on her, because he's in a hypomanic phase, and we use the word cheat, and he goes out and he finds sex on the outside, and she comes back and now she's angry at him because in a way she thinks he's shared his heart.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks he's been unfaithful to her love. And what he's done is he's just done what he needs.
It has nothing to do with that.
has nothing to do
nothing
with
to do
it. It's just chemical adjustments.
So if the woman understands this and could understand the bipolar 2 diagnosis, she would have a different perspective on what she should then do next rather than rush into a divorce. You know, she would see this as a personality or a mental condition needs either some kind of a treatment if it's getting out of hand, or certainly understanding, certainly a kind of understanding. And then she has a choice to say in the marriage, well, I'm going to stick with this, or I can't live with a bipolar person and having these phases of high energy, high sex drive, and so forth. I've got to find someone else, or I'm going to make the most of it and try to work with all the assets that this guy has. Because believe me, he probably has many, many assets and advantages, and probably is a good breadwinner for this woman, probably a wonderful husband and a father when he's not in this hypomanic state that's gone too far.
And similarly, if the man discovers that his wife is doing this in a hypermanic sexual state, and she's out there, and he looks at it, and how could you have betrayed me? How could you have sex with somebody else? You know, men get so crazy about infidelity with women. But again, if he values his wife, if he values the woman he's with, if he values her and he sees this thing that she was going through was driven by some part of her brain, it's really this, or alcohol, or it could have been drugs, or it could have been any number of things.
Certainly, many, many divorces in this country are due to the fact that you've got a spouse that is in a hypomanic phase that has gone too far. And going too far, they've gone out and found another person. They're committing adultery. And if the spouse does not understand this condition and how prevalent it is and the positive side of it, it could easily result in a divorce, you know. And this is one of the things I pointed out in the book about the assets or the beneficial side of bipolar as well as the downside.
How does bipolar, what's the difference between men and women in the way they manifest their bipolarity? Are men more often, have more bipolar 1, or men have more bipolar 2? Do women have more bipolar 1 and bipolar 2?
Generally speaking, if you look at depression across the board, that's pretty well known that women tend to outnumber men almost 2-1 in this country. But we're not even sure of that, because if a man is depressed, it's very hard for him to go to a clinic and sign up and put his name down. It's more humiliating. So the women are available during the day. They go to the doctor. They go to the clinic. The way this comes out is that the women have depression twice as much as men do. I don't really believe that. I think it's equal. Probably it's equally distributed between the two sexes, but that it's more humiliating for the male to admit he has a psychiatric problem and he doesn't have time.
So you think that's the primary reason?
I think so. I think men, it's harder for a man to say, I need to go to a shrink. Women find it easier, and they've got the time to do it. They're
so that's on the depressive side.
That's on the depressive side.
What about on the manic
side? In terms of manifestations, the men manifest the bipolar too. More in the business world. It's the scheming, the dealing, the wheeling, and oftentimes this results in being a major tycoon in a hedge fund. Maybe it's a tremendous success, but also it can get into fraudulent behavior, you know, and the way if it goes too far in the bipolar 2 patient, it gets into some criminal activity. And
you've seen a lot of very often you'll hear about traitors.
Yeah, I'd read an article in the New York Times, and I would see a stretched limousine, I'm talking about 25 years ago, pull up in front of my door, and a wildly happy, euphoric guy that's just been written up in the papers and dismissed from his job, and a big crisis all over Wall Street Journal. Guy comes in to see me, and, you know, he gets diagnosed by me and put on medicine and then goes out and, you know, maybe gets a shorter penalty, but he gets disbarred from Wall Street. But he pops up 5 years later in some other outstanding position in Florida. You know, I see this over and over again. But the men, the high-flying bipolar 2 men, tend to manifest it either in hypersexuality, multiple affairs, or in their business wheelings and dealings. And if it gets out of line, if they start getting into trouble, they start self-medicating with alcohol or cocaine. You know, the cocaine they take for the depressed phase. If the high starts wearing off and their energy is not up there, they want to get it back again, and they frequently go to cocaine or stimulants, you know. All of the new stimulants that have been coming out besides the Ritalin and Quartin and Adderall and those sorts of things, and now they get into the pain relieving stimulants that have been, you know, on the front page of Time magazine and everything in the last couple of years.
Do women have a seasonal pattern usually to their bipolarity?
The overall statistics show that if you're going to get a depression, the highest period of the highest depression incidence in this country is in the spring and in the fall. The higher portion, or the hypomanic portion, tends to come in the late spring and the summertime usually. But the winter is more for depression. If we're talking, then we get into the concept of seasonal affective disorder, of course, where every fall, every October for 5-10 years, person gets a 2-month depression, the rest of the year they're fine. That's seasonal affective disorder. So fall and spring are the two high points.
Do you think there's, it's a personal curiosity, do you think that there's any relationship between migraine headache and bipolarity? And what might that be? I know there's coincidence. What do you think? I mean, just if you were to think about it with what you know about the pathways.
Well, there is a certain cyclicity to migraine, but, you know, most migraine patients, I think, will tell you that they also have a major stress it tends to precipitate. Not all of them, but I think it's a question that has been looked at a bit, and I know that some of the drugs that have treated bipolar disorder have been given to migraine patients. They haven't
become Topamax is given to
Topamax, yes, and the old days there were a lot of studies with lithium and migraine, yeah. So some of these patients that have responded to medications for bipolar we've seen that also in patients with migraine. But there is some relationship. It's not proven. It's not researched adequately. Some connection, but we can't. Tell you today what it is.
If you see somebody who's got a hyper, and we call it a hypermanic when we say that a person is in the up phase of the bipolar.
We call it hypomania, believe it or not.
Hypomania, right?
And what that means is hypo means a little less than mania. You see, so it's hypomania means that you're a little less than full manic. You're a mild manic. Hypomania means mild mania. Oftentimes, beneficial hypomania, you see.
And then what does hypermania mean?
There is no such term. But I do, I've got a term that I use, and it's called, hypothymic I use, and hyperthymic. Now, what is a hyperthymic?
It relates to heat temperature. Huh?
Hyperthymic, yeah. The hyperthymic, thymia also refers to mood. Hyperthymic means you're at the top of normal. This is my definition in the book. If you say you're normal, what is normal? But if you're at the top, I say, how are you feeling today? Top of normal? Top of normal, I call hyperthymic. Now, I don't see that as a classification in psychiatry. I think that's a real asset. If you're functioning at the top of normal all the time, that's the best place to be. Now, you get above that a little bit, you're getting into hypomania. Now, in hypomania, you may function better than the hyperthymics. You may have this outstanding, but you're also in that risk zone as you could go a little too high with a hypomania or go down again.
Is it possible for a person to spend their entire life in a bipolar 2, a manic place without ever dipping into the depression? Or is it always depressive?
Yeah.
Is there always a swing?
That's a question that we've been asking for years and years. Now, let me give you an answer to that. Supposing there is this person who is hypomanic all his lifetime, means he's top of the world, he's doing everything fine, he's mildly euphoric, everything's saying, how would you know that he exists? He's not going to ever sign up and register with any psychiatrist or any clinic, is he? You wouldn't know the answer to that. So my answer would be, yes, they're out there, but we'll never see them. They'll never come for help. Why should they?
Because they feel good.
They feel too good all the time. You've got to come for help either because you've gone too high and are crazy, and people in the family, you know, identified it, or you do yourself, or you go into a plummeting deep depression. But if you're in a top of normal, a little high all your life, and you're never going to end up as a statistic. Statistic.
Gotcha. My guest. Thank you so much for being with us. We're running out of time. Dr. Ronald Phoebe, what a fun guy. Bipolar 2 is the name of the book, and it's just come out, just available on your stands, Rodale Press. And we're going to be, that's exciting. You'd also go to the website. What is the website? Do you have a website for this book?
My website is www.feevee.com.
Feevee, F-I-E-V-E.com.
Yep.
Nice to be with you again.
Thank you, Arma.
Sure. We're going to be going now, and I'll be back with you tomorrow, as I said, at 1 p.m. for an entertaining Thanksgiving, as usual, program. If you want a copy of today's program, you go to thepositivemind.com.
Many times I whisper, oh my.